We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time she will choose life, but they can't do it without your help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside them. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR.
We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. I'm Walker Wildman with you on this edition of the show. The show is hosted each week by Rick Green and myself. Rick is known as America's Constitution Coach, founder, president of Patriot Academy, also former Texas state legislator, and a stirrer of trouble is also Rick's title. So he's with us each week as well, along with myself. And it's good to be with you here on At the Core on American Family Radio. The American Family Radio app is free. You can download it on any device that you have. Just go to your app store, type in American Family Radio or AFR, and you can click the download button for the American Family Radio app. There's two main things that the AFR app does. The first thing is you can listen live to AFR. AFR is live broadcasting 24/7 there on the AFR app. So if you get just outside of our radio signal, you can pull up AFR app and get 24/7 live high quality audio right there to your mobile device. Also, you can get past episodes, also known as podcast, there on the American Family Radio app. So there's a lot to offer there for the AFR app, and it's free. You don't even have to log in. Just click the download button, and then you'll have unlimited access to American Family Radio content. Let's turn our attention to the scripture. John chapter 18 is where we are this week. John chapter 18, looking at verses 19 and 20. The high priest then asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. Jesus answered him and said, "I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple where the Jews always meet, and in secret I have said nothing. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me and what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said." And so the high priests are trying to act as if they don't know what's going on here, or rather they're trying to ask and talk as if they don't know Jesus' teachings already. And remember, these are the high priests, they're religious leaders of the time, and they've heard the word on the street, so to speak, about this Messiah, or in their view, this person who claims to be the Messiah. And so them asking Jesus, "Hey, tell us a little bit about yourself, tell us about your doctrine," it's not a genuine question. They already know the answer because word has gotten around the region on who this Jesus is. So Jesus says, look, basically I'm paraphrasing, look guys, my ministry's been public, all right? Everything I've been doing is public. There's no secrets here, nothing here to hide. I'm the Messiah. And he ends by saying, my disciples can testify and those around me can testify to what I have been saying and what I have been doing. The same stands true today. What Jesus offers us is publicly available, and it's available to everyone. The gospel of Jesus Christ is a message of salvation to anyone who shall receive. That's what the scripture says. And so there's nothing exclusive, there's nothing top secret, there's nothing overly complicated about what Jesus Christ has done and what he's offering. It's just a matter of whether one will believe or will not believe. That's what Jesus' message is, and that's still true today as it was 2,000 plus years ago when the Messiah walked the earth. That's John chapter 18, looking at verses 19 and 20 and 21 there in John chapter 18. Well, as I mentioned, almost each show, if I remember, we're going to some special places this year. And one of the reasons it's special is because it's America's 250th anniversary, 250th birthday as a country. And so this is a good time if you've always been, if you've wanted to go to places like Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown, if you've wanted to go to our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., and see all the monuments, see the U.S. Capitol, maybe go over to the White House, if you've wanted to go walk the Freedom Trail in Boston or go to Plymouth Rock, all of these places we're going to in 2026, yes, that's this year. And so if you want to go to one of these places during the 250th anniversary year of America's founding, then we would love for you to join us. You can go over to tours.afa.net, tours.afa.net, and check out the dates, itinerary, and the pricing, all that information. We would absolutely love to have you with us in Williamsburg, Washington, or Boston here in 2026. June and September are the dates of those trips. June and September are the dates of those trips. And actually, June registration is going to close here in about 4 to 6 weeks. 4 to 6 weeks, we're going to close out June registration. And so go ahead and get that underway if you do want to go with us in June. Well, let's turn our attention to some of the news of the week and see what we can cover this segment. I've got this local news report. I've had this in the can for several days. This is a local news report on a very, very heinous crime, murder, actually, committed by an illegal immigrant. And this is quite, the past several years has been quite telling as far as what the Democrats think about illegal immigration and how they covered for illegal immigrants over the years, whether it comes to their stance against the border wall, which, by the way, let's not forget the border wall is being rapidly built as we speak. It's fully funded, which is a major policy victory, major national security victory. And so let's don't forget that as we go into the midterms. But this is out of Virginia, and this is a very heinous crime. You'll hear in the report what happened in Virginia. But the Democrats don't want to talk about it. And even the local and state Democrat leaders and the legislature there don't want to talk about it. And you'll hear towards the end of the clip where the media, the local news reporter, is repeatedly asking the state lawmakers, hey, what do you think about this? What are you guys going to do to fix this or prevent this from happening again? And they don't want to hear a thing about it. This is the kind of Democrat Party we're seeing today where they don't even want to take on violent, illegal immigrants. Let's listen to this clip. This is going to be clip one.
Soft on crime policies and Democratic lawmakers in Virginia are facing intense scrutiny and growing backlash after an illegal alien with a lengthy criminal history was charged with murdering a mother. Investigators say Abdul Jalal stabbed and killed Stephanie Mentor as she waited at a bus stop. Court records show he'd already been arrested at least 40 times before that for several violent offenses, but was repeatedly released by Fairfax District Attorney Democrat Steve Descano. And now newly obtained emails show police warned Descano three separate times since last May about Jalal, calling him dangerous and detailing a history of attacks, including prior stabbings. Those warnings, though, went nowhere each time the charges were dropped. Critics say it took a murder to put him behind bars, but even now, Virginia Democrats are refusing to turn the illegal alien over to ICE.
Governor Spanberger, in her response, basically said, you can come and get this guy who just murdered Stephanie Mentor if you have a judicial warrant, which she very well knows, having been a federal officer herself, is not a tool in immigration's toolbox. So what she's basically saying is, no, you can't have it.
She's setting the policy that Virginia is a sanctuary state. And this case, Stephanie Minter's case and her death, is the tragic consequence.
You don't know about Stephanie Mentor or Abdul Jalal? What's your reaction to an illegal immigrant murdering a woman allegedly in Fairfax County last week?
In the middle of a conversation, thank you.
Sir, What's your reaction to a Virginia mother being murdered allegedly by an illegal immigrant in Fairfax County, an area that you represent, sir? You don't have anything to say? Delegate Helmer, Lieutenant Governor, what's your reaction to this murder in Fairfax County? No response? What do you have to say to the family of Stephanie Mentor, Lieutenant Governor?
Democratic Governor Abigail Spanberger has demanded ICE obtain a signed judicial warrant in order to take custody of Jallo, which officials argue is not legally required under federal immigration laws.
This is completely unnecessary. There's no need for a judicial warrant. This is an illegal immigrant. It's not a U.S. citizen. And so this is what Democrats do. They play games and people die. And I don't know when the voting base and the voting populace is going to figure this thing out. This is not rocket science, and they're doing this in our face. Here's what's happened, all right? We've got these radical, off-the-cliff Democrats. And let's be honest here, all right? 90-plus percent of these cases are Democrats, probably higher than that. These are Democrat politicians and elected officials, in this instance, a district attorney and a governor, who not only don't want to do anything about illegal immigration, but they actually go out of their way to help the murderous illegal immigrant. And this doesn't even make sense. Like, there's nothing about this where you go, yeah, I kind of understand why they're doing that. Supposedly, this isn't even a voter, if they're following the law. So this isn't a voter, so they're not losing a voter. What on earth is the reasoning behind letting an illegal immigrant, and I don't even, actually at this point, I don't even care if it's an illegal immigrant or not. That's almost a side point. But this dude was arrested nearly 40 times for things like, crimes like rape, assault, and a stabbing. That was before the murder. And the Fairfax County District Attorney lets him walk. What on this earth are you doing? If there's not a textbook case of legal dereliction of duty, then what is? I don't understand how this is even legal. So you're a district attorney charged and a sworn, taking a sworn oath to enforce the laws of Fairfax County. But the guy, the criminal, who's also an illegal immigrant, who's been arrested 40 times for violent offenses, you let walk. So what is the oath of office at this point? It's completely meaningless. And then once the murder has occurred, now the governor won't let ICE come pick him up. So it's like, well, we didn't think he was this bad. Well, now he's murdered somebody, as if rape wasn't bad enough before. And a stabbing, by the way. Now he's murdered somebody, and the governor's saying, oh, you got to have a judicial warrant. Even though, legally speaking, a judicial warrant is not federally required to pick up an illegal immigrant. Democrat governor saying, oh, well, you got to have a Spanberger's her name. What a name. You got to come pick up, you got to get a judicial warrant. No, you don't. That is nowhere in federal statute. That is some made up state requirement that is 100% subjective, by the way, that the governor can completely override at any point. You don't need a judicial warrant. You need an administrative warrant. And there's a key difference. Immigration and Customs Enforcement operates under administrative warrants every day of the week. And federal law, under the immigration statute, only requires a minimum of an administrative warrant to pick up a known illegal immigrant that is in prison. Actually, you don't even have to be in prison. You can pick them up anywhere. And so this is one of those instances. Remember we were arguing about this in Minneapolis? That's the same thing. So we've already got the illegal immigrant. Fairfax County has this illegal immigrant murderer, alleged murderer, locked up right now behind bars. And Trump's immigration officials are saying, hey guys, we'll drive over there and pick him up if you'd like, and we'll send him back to where he came from. And the governor's saying, no, you can't do that. We don't want to let him go. Oh, okay, so we're going to use Virginia tax dollars to house this monster for who knows how long. Or let him back on the streets, who knows? There's absolutely no reason for this nonsense. We'll be back in a few.
The AFR app is a powerful tool, but it does have limitations. You can't use it to change the oil in your vehicle or get rid of carpet stains. It won't walk the dog, won't pick up the dry cleaning, or take the kids to practice. But while you're doing those things, you can listen to your favorite AFR content through the app on your phone, smart device, or Roku. Just go to your app store or visit AFR.net. Listen to AFR wherever you go with the AFR app.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Well, if you listened to the last segment, it was a doozy. I'll tell you, I don't know. We were talking about illegal immigration and this alleged illegal immigrant murderer in Fairfax County, Virginia, and been locked up nearly 40 times, once for rape, stabbing, etc., who's now murdered a mother. So now we've got kids without a mom in Fairfax County because the Democrats are dumb and evil in this instance. This is just baffling. And I don't know how you work with these people. I mean, we're at the place where the quote other side, and this isn't, honestly, this isn't just Democrats, all right? This problem of stupidity, lacking common sense, and in some instances just pure evil, which is this instance, I don't even know how you start out a negotiation with the quote other side in instances like this. I mean, it's just so bizarre. So the Democrat governor is blocking the release of a repeat offender, now alleged murderer, and Immigration and Customs Enforcement has volunteered to come pick him up and process his removal, and the Democrat governor says no thanks. No thanks. And then says, well, you need a judicial warrant. Well, number one, they could probably get a judicial warrant if they wanted to, but it's completely unnecessary. They don't even need, I just looked it up, they don't even need an administrative warrant. Why? Because U.S. Code, 8 U.S. Code, 1357 and 1226 explicitly allows immigration officers to arrest non-citizens without a judicial warrant or an administrative warrant if they have probable cause to believe the person is removable under immigration law. No judicial warrant or administrative warrant, for that matter, is required to arrest non-citizens in public spaces. So if Fairfax County Jail go to the illegal immigrant's jail cell, handcuff him, walk him to the back door, and open the door, and then there's immigration officers standing at the back door, and you hand him to immigration officers. They put him in the back of the car. Within 24 hours, he's deported. This is how this works. This was the debate in Minneapolis and in Minnesota. Because local and state law enforcement, they're arresting these bad guys all the time. I mean, they're running into these people, these illegal immigrants, all the time. And if they know, most of these agencies, if they know that ICE will come pick these people up, then they'll arrest them. They'll keep them for 24 hours. Immigration officials come up to the jail or the jail, and then they'll take them. Problem solved. And so this housing, this permanent housing and sheltering of these very, very evil people is just quite baffling. I just can't come up with a possible excuse that makes sense. Even though I might disagree with it, I can't even come up with something that makes sense politically or otherwise. Except we don't like Trump. I was telling Bobby during the break, Bobby, that there's nothing else makes sense other than we don't like Trump. We don't like Trump, and if Trump is going to deport this guy, then we're going to be his friend. I mean, that's the only logical conclusion you can draw here.
Yeah, exactly. You would think there'd be a little gratis toward him. I mean, the president did get a new haircut. It's something. You know,
he's looking
something
good.
To go on there. He's looking good. Yeah. Trim. You know, it's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the hatred's got to be.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, unless
against one body over, 12 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's just bizarre. I mean, I can get you don't like people or they get on your nerves or you don't like their politics, but you got a repeat violent offender who's been alleged to murder here, who shouldn't be in the country. I don't know how you make that political. It's just, I can't even fathom being in that kind of position to politicize something that seems pretty straightforward.
People need to read between the lines there. They just, if that's the way you're going to cast your vote, then woe be to you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there you have it, folks. That's the latest on the illegal immigration front. Speaking of that front, and speaking of trying to get something through of common sense, the Save America Act is pending before the U.S. Senate. And Senator John Thune, of course, is saying, oh, we don't have the votes. We don't have the votes. We have the filibuster. Oh, we don't have the votes. Okay, so the Save America Act, which does several things, one of the things it does, amongst many, is makes you have to have proof of citizenship to register to vote. Oh, okay. So you've got to be a U.S. citizen to register to vote. Brilliant. 80%+ of voters from both parties agree with that. You've also got to show a government-issued photo ID when you vote in federal elections. This has nothing to do with state and local elections. It 100% has to do with federal elections because that's Congress's authority. That's their jurisdiction, federal elections. Congress cannot regulate state and local elections. That's up to the states. So this only has to do with federal elections. Photo ID and proof of citizenship to register to vote. Very simple issue, very straightforward. The vast majority of voters from both parties, we're talking up into the 80s and 90s%, agree with this. So this is like a slam dunk political move from any party to do this. But we've got 3 or 4 Republican senators who just love this fake filibuster. Oh, the Senate rules. Oh, the Senate traditions. I mean, this Senate and Republican quote-unquote leadership in the Senate, they're running, I'm just trying to come up with an analogy here, they're running this most outdated country club ever. I mean, they run this like a country club, everybody's buddies, it's exclusive, there's only 100 of them. If you're the Republican side, there's only 53. And they're just so stuck in their ways. And it's one thing to be stuck in your ways based on principle or conviction or even the Constitution. And you say, you know, this is what our founding fathers intended and this is what we'll do. But these rules in the Senate, folks, there's nothing sacred about them. There's just not. It's so overrated. I would actually argue that in some instances, the rules in the U.S. Senate are actually, I'm not going to say unconstitutional because that might be a stretch, but they're definitely extra constitutional, and it wasn't the original intent of our founders for the Senate to work like this. I can say that with confidence. If the founding fathers, which they debated this, by the way, if you read some of the founding papers, some of the letters back and forth, and some of the debates, the threshold for passing legislation was debated. But when you read the text of the Constitution, the founding fathers only outlined just a handful, not even a handful, just a couple instances where you need more than a simple majority. And I may be missing some here, but we know for sure, obviously, to ratify the Constitution, not only do you need states, two-thirds, but you also need more than a simple majority in the Senate and the House. Also, impeachment. If you want to impeach, you've got to have, obviously, two-thirds. And so the Founding Fathers, they had this debate. They've already had the debate 250 years ago. What vote threshold is needed to do things like impeach a judge or a president or ratify the Constitution? Oh, okay, we need more than a simple majority. What's that going to be? Two-thirds. On passing legislation, this was debated. And guess where the Founding Fathers landed? Simple majority. In the House, in both chambers, all that is constitutionally required to pass legislation is a simple majority. And at some point, over the last, this goes back probably 40 years. And this was, by the way, the filibuster was actually, I think it was used primarily to block some civil rights legislation originally. But nonetheless, I'll fact check that. Nonetheless, at some point, these lousy politicians decided, we need to do this 60 vote rule. You know, because we're so efficient up here, we need to slow this thing down. Get 60 votes to get something done. Well, you know what? When you're in America 2026, you can't get 60% of anybody to agree on anything. I mean, for goodness sake, we've got the Democrat governor of Virginia not wanting to release a 40-plus instant violent offender who's now been accused of murdering a mom in Fairfax County. If we can't get the Democrats to agree on that, what are we going to get them to agree to? So in a perfect world where 75% of the country has their head on right and is not consumed by spiritual darkness, then sure, we can get 60 votes. I mean, after all, we're talking about things like securing a border and making sure only legal residents, legal citizens vote, take a photo ID. I mean, after all, if you want to get Sudafed, photo ID, sir. Want to get cigarettes? Photo ID, sir. You want to get alcohol? Photo ID, sir. You want to go pick up your prescription? Photo ID, sir. You want to buy a certain level of chemicals at the Home Depot? Well, they're going to flag you in the ATF database or the DEA database. So we're doing all this hyper-surveillance. You and I are getting flagged for purchases that are, quote, suspicious. And we're having to pull out proof of who we are every single day of the week. You can't even sign up for a service without giving them your social security number, driver's license, date of birth, favorite place to eat. And we want to make sure that only citizens are voting, and this is a high bar to meet. This is just a really big ask. We got to have 60 votes. Well, what? Guess what? We can't get 60 votes because one whole party has just gone off the deep end. And then the one party that at least has their head halfway on right, they can't get it together. I mean, I'm on a soapbox today. So we've got this country. We've been around 250 years. And we've been in a bad way for a long time. I mean, the sun's not shining and the rainbows aren't out. Let me just tell you, we're headed up $40 trillion in debt. $40 trillion in debt. Now we're doing a tango over back in the Middle East. Shocked. We're back in the Middle East. Whatever you think about the Iran situation, it is quite frustrating that we're back in the Middle East. So we're back in the Middle East. We're burning between $10 and $20 billion a day in the Middle East on bombs and military assets. And the American people are over here paying bukus of money in taxes. And if you and I don't pay our taxes, they're coming and knocking. But if you're a Somali and you're raiding our welfare system, well, you might need a judicial warrant. You might need a judicial warrant. Well, you can't do that. You can't target them, President Trump. You don't have authority to come into Minnesota and target the fraudsters up here who shouldn't even be here. Why on earth do we have millions of Somalis? I have no idea. Why would you import Somali Muslims? This doesn't even make sense. But the American people are so gracious. We're so kind-hearted. We don't want to be viewed as mean. So all we say is, okay. Whatever about the Somali fraudsters, whatever about Ilhan Omar marrying her brother, whatever about the Iran situation, just whatever you guys want to do, all I want is to make sure that only citizens vote in America's elections. Like, that's all we're asking for. Just give me something. We just turned out, I'm representing the American people here, we just turned out in record numbers for President Trump because we wanted things like, hey, photo ID when you vote in federal elections. And so we're like little kids, and all we just want is something simple. And the Senate, let's just call them the adults, even though they're not. They really should be the kids in this example. But the voters are the kids, and we're just going to the adults in the Senate because they think they're special and the most deliberative body in the world. And we're like, hey guys, look, we know you're raiding our taxes, you know. We know that the Somalis are looting our welfare programs. Everybody's getting ripped off everywhere they turn. We're back in the Middle East, dropping multi-million dollar bombs every 3 seconds. But we just want to make sure citizens are voting in our elections and only citizens. And the Senate goes, I'm sorry, guys. We're just not going to be able to do that. We don't have 60 votes. We don't have 60 votes. Because the whole Democrat Party in lockstep votes for everything that is anti-America. I mean, in lockstep. If it's against America, Democrats are totally in favor of it. And so something so simple, the Senate has made it overly complicated. It just doesn't make sense. We'll be back.
Abortion moves fast. And right now, in our communities, women are being pressured to make irreversible decisions in moments of fear and panic. They're told to act quickly or risk losing support. Many feel they have no other option. But because of you, they do. At Preborn Network Clinics, a woman receives what the abortion industry will never offer. Compassion without pressure. Clarity about the life growing inside her. Real support to welcome her baby. And the hope of the gospel. She's given a free ultrasound and space to breathe. And more than 80% of the time when a mother sees her baby on a preborn ultrasound, she chooses life. This March, Preborn is believing to save 6,800 babies, but it will take 124 partners saying yes every day. Here's my ask. Pause your busy day just for a moment and become a yes right now. Just $28 provides one ultrasound, $140 helps five mothers, and every dollar helps save babies and share hope. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to the program here on American Family Radio. Well, when you really zoom out and get out of the headlines and look big picture here, we've learned a lot about our country and about our elected officials over the last 12 months, 18 months. I mean, we've learned a lot over the years, but what President Trump has done, to his credit, is he has helped reveal who our friends are and who our enemies are. And this couching things as Republicans versus Democrats is really not very helpful, because as I just outlined in the last segment, the Republican Party has so many problems. We can't get Republican senators, at least enough of them, to bypass this fake filibuster and vote on the Save America Act to make sure that only citizens are voting in federal elections. I mean, we can't get the Republicans to do that because there's a handful of them that are so weak, so compromised, that they just can't hand President Trump a quote-unquote victory. And so that's the frustration, and it's very, very valid. And but we've seen where we are. Everybody knows where we are now, and you can look out and you can see who your friends are and who your enemies are based on how they address the issues of the day, or in some instances, how they fail to address the issues of the day. As I mentioned a couple days ago on the program late last week, this Iran situation cannot last more than a couple more weeks. And I think that's stretching it. So we've had a couple of facts here, a couple of interesting facts. We've had, the U.S. has had the USS Ford, Gerald R. Ford, is now deployed for the longest deployment in U.S. history, all right, for an aircraft carrier, that is. So we have the USS Gerald R. Ford, obviously over in CENTCOM, Area of Responsibility in the Middle East. They've been deployed for over 334 days. This goes back to the last record on was the Abraham Lincoln. That was deployed for about 295 days back during the Iraq War. And then the USS Nimitz completed a 321-day deployment in 2020 and 2021. So we've had the USS Gerald R. Ford at sea for going on a year. That's a long time for one crew. My point in bringing that up is that this has to wrap up very soon. And to the military and to President Trump's defense, they have made unbelievable progress against Iran in the last few weeks. And we're not even at the two-week mark. And I think when this is all said and done, if gone about properly, and if we pull out quickly, declare victory, and come home, this could be obviously a very good policy win, but also a very good political win. Because we've just obliterated an enemy in the Middle East, and it didn't take us 7 or 10 years and $1 trillion and boots on the ground. So this has the potential to go really good or really bad, depending on how long President Trump lingers this thing out. But it doesn't need to last more than a couple more weeks. We've got to get this thing over with. Now, the signs are good. Here's the latest ballistic missile and drone launch rate, which gives you an indication of what Iran's capabilities are, or lack thereof. On the first day of attack, Iran launched 428 ballistic missiles. This is according to the Wall Street Journal. As of yesterday, Iran launched 24 ballistic missiles. That's in a 24-hour period. So that's a 95% decline from day one to now, which we're only talking 12 to 13 days after. On the drone front, Iran launched 345 drones on day one, and on Tuesday of this week, yesterday, they launched 48. So that's almost a 90% reduction. And so we have severely damaged and limited their ability to launch offensive attacks against Arab allies and Israel in the region. And we've sunk roughly 60 of their boats. We've basically sunk all of their boats. And the Strait of Hormuz shows signs of reopening, if it's not actually already reopened. Iran's ability to harm people in the region is just dwindling by the day and by the hour. And so at this rate, by the end of this week, I don't know what Iran's going to have left. President Trump indicated such. I mean, he basically said there's not much left there. And so let's listen to this Fox report. This is Trey Yingst talking about how Iran has threatened to deploy water mines in the Strait of Hormuz. But obviously the U.S. is combating that. That's clip three. Let's listen.
Yeah, absolutely. U.S. Central Command has been incredibly effective in taking out the vessels that are used to lay these sea mines. And we know, according to the Wall Street Journal, it's believed that less than 10 mines have actually been placed by the Iranian regime. And we heard from President Trump overnight on Truth Social, and he warned Iran against laying mines in the Strait of Hormuz. This is an important thoroughfare. 20% of the world's oil actually travels normally through the Strait of Hormuz. And so it's something that has a domino effect around the world in terms of gas prices and other things as it relates to energy markets. There's also the issue of liquefied natural gas. We know that earlier in this conflict, the Qataris shut down all of their LNG production. And this is the first time they've actually done that in 30 years. And so again, President Trump is warning the Iranian regime, if they want to lay these mines, they're going to pay a heavy price for doing so.
So I don't think they're going to be laying any mines. I mean, it would just be baffling for the U.S. intelligence and military to miss that or not intercept that. So I don't think they're going to be laying any mines. And this is all saber rattling. This is all empty threats. The Iranians, as far as our knowledge, they don't even have any boats left. They can't go lay mines. They have no submarines and no boats left. So there's nothing left of this regime. I mean, President Trump actually talked this morning before leaving the White House about how there's not much left else to strike. He said if we keep striking, we're going to start striking stuff that isn't really military. Meaning hitting some of their energy infrastructure, things like that, non-military assets. And so this thing appears to be winding down, and I don't know, the Strait of Hormuz, we've got to get that thing back open. If it's not already, we have to get that back open, because that's what's causing energy prices to go up and down. Now, I reported on Monday about the G7 member countries that were releasing some of their reserve to help settle the energy prices, and that's helped a lot. I mean, energy, oil actually made its biggest up and down in history, in the history of the energy market, made its big increase and decrease single day move in history when this all happened. But these countries, these G7 and other countries, have officially released it. It was in question on Monday afternoon. They weren't sure if it was going to take place, but it looks like President Trump has secured the release of about 400 million barrels of oil, which, as I said, is about a 20-day supply of what goes through the Strait of Hormuz. And so this is a big deal. This can settle energy prices in enough time for us to squash Iran and get out of there. And I don't know what the inner workings are. I don't know what the conversations are in the White House, but I can tell you this. Here's what should be the talk. Here's what should be the strategy. Hey guys, let's completely obliterate Iran's military capabilities, which these are the goals, by the way. So this is not novel information here. And when Iran is launching zero drones, has the ability to launch zero drones and zero ballistic missiles, which we should achieve that in days, then we're out. We're out of here. Now, of course, they're going to leave lingering forces in the region, of course. They're going to leave aircraft carriers over there just to make sure that Iran doesn't act out. But I'm talking about the Strait of Hormuz has to be reopened, and when you've completely obliterated them militarily, we pull out. You pull out. 3 weeks later, declare victory. You're under the four-week timeline. President Trump's always an overachiever. He's always about beating deadlines. He said 4 weeks when we started this. We're 11 to 12 days in. You pull out at week two or three. You call it a victory. You tell Iran, hey, Iran, I don't know what you guys got going on in your country, But I can tell you one thing. If you build nukes, if you build ballistic missiles, or if you build drones, then we'll come back, we'll bomb you for two more weeks, and we'll set you back 30 years again. And then this is what we do. We come back. But this Washington, D.C. thinking, that this Potomac thinking of, oh, if we bomb them, then we have to go in and we got to clean it all up. And we got to make sure that everybody gets back in the right position, or we got to reinstitute the government, or we got to train the military, or we got to do whatever on earth excuse they can come up with. No, we don't. We don't. That's not a moral imperative. That's nowhere enshrined that we have to bomb and then go in. No. No, we've done it in the past. It is an unmitigated disaster. This is a nation, Iran, 90 million people, of at least half of which are Islamic radicals. This notion out there that Iran is just blossoming with freedom-loving people everywhere is a falsehood. It is a straight lie. There is zero evidence that Iran is just bursting at the seams of freedom-loving people. No, that's not true. Now, it is true. There are some positive things going on in Iran that I don't want to, gloss over. It is seeing exponential growth in Christianity. It's one of the most flourishing countries for the gospel per capita. That is true. And there are some remnants of Iranian Revolution. People remember how Iran used to be before the jihadis took over, basically. And yeah, there's still some of that left, but we're not talking numbers that can just take the country over here. Even though those things are good, those things are true, we're not talking 50 million people that are just up and ready to just turn this country around. And even if it was, well, then you got 40 other million jihadis out there in the country. And so this notion that there's enough freedom-loving people in Iran that just take the thing over and just boom, overnight, we've got regime change. That's not what's on the ground there. That's just not true. And so we need to be honest with the American public about what the expectations are and what the ability for Iran to pick a different leader is. What's their actual ability? And of course, they're not armed, and I don't think we should arm them and create some kind of proxy war within an Iran. So all of this thing, everything I'm telling you leads back to the original point that I made, that we bomb, we obliterate military capabilities, and then we pull out. And I know President Trump doesn't want to, forecast that, hey, we're pulling out, but that's what needs to happen here. That's what needs to happen. And it'll be the first time, at least in my lifetime, that we've completely obliterated a foreign enemy militarily without a boot on the ground and in a matter of weeks and not years. And we spent billions and not trillions. This will be the first time in my lifetime that that's happened, at least at this scale. And I think we also need to be very careful about this continuing to pick off their leaders. Because right now, between the U.S. and Israel, or Israel's been doing most of this work, we've assassinated, which is effectively what we've done, like dozens, if not hundreds, of Iranian Revolutionary Guard members and members of the cleric. Now they're like on their number three deep, and their reports are that we bombed him, over the last 24 hours. I think we just need to be very careful not to create a power vacuum and leave nothing left of any type of government leadership. That might sound good, but in practicality, that could be really bad. And that's not what our primary objective was when we went in, by the way. And so I don't think we have to have regime change to get a victory here. That's my point. I don't think you have to have full regime change to get a quote-unquote victory in Iran. But we need to get in, we're in, and we need to get out quick. Get out quick. We back.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.